Welcome back to episode 173 of the Tetro Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD, and we got our co-host with us today,
Cyber Shorty.
And it's just about time for us to just get back to us and give y'all what y'all like to hear. But first and foremost, if you're listening to us on any podcast media player, please leave us a review. Also, if you look in the description, we have the shared mailbox and how to leave voicemails so we can actually answer your voicemails live while we're doing the show. And so I know y'all appreciate that, so y'all can tap in with us. And last but not least, most of y'all that subscribed, actually no, most people who aren't subscribed are watching the show. I need y'all to subscribe and hit the like button so we can get into, you know, we want to hit 100K. I just put it like that. But it don't seem like it's been a long time. But
it does seem like it's been a long time.
You think so?
For a solo mission? Yeah, it's been a long time.
It was April. Yeah, it was April when we was here, when we did the double. That's why I probably don't feel like that.
Yeah, but before then.
Yeah, I think it has, because I mean, I don't even think, I can't remember the last time where it was just us and we did something virtual.
It's been
and
a
people
while.
Been like booking up like crazy. But yeah, man, we got some cool stories for y'all. I think the first one that might be to start off with is, so if you wasn't under a rock, CrowdStrike laid off like 5% of its workforce. So that's like around 500 workers. But the crazy thing about this, guys, is like they didn't lay these people off because of bad performance. I'm going to read what they say and then I'll just give my thoughts on it, because I've been of a reorg, or like a lot of times a company will have what's the thing that they call it? A great performing year. And then right after that, they'll do layoffs. Or you'll get a promotion and then you'll get laid off. Like, it's a lot of weird stuff. Cybersecurity giant CrowdStrike said on Wednesday that it will lay off 5% of its global workforce, which amounts to about 500 workers. In an 8K filing, CrowdStrike said the layoffs were part of a strategic plan to evolve its operation to yield greater efficiencies as the company continues to scale its business with focus and discipline to meet its goal of $10 billion in ending annual recurring revenue. The company also said it was planning to hire in key strategic areas throughout its fiscal year ending January 31st, 2026. These changes position us to move faster, operate more efficiently, and continue our cybersecurity leadership, company CEO George Kurtz said in a letter to employees. And I'm going to kind of stop right there, because I was reading the article and it said how a lot of times when people move to AI, it don't even pan it out. Matter of fact, Klarna is going back to hiring people because the AI was not doing what it needed to do for them.
Mm. I mean, you still need that people element. You still need that human there. You still need somebody to be able to touch, oversee, and we'll talk about that later in the day. But yeah, I think you still need to be able to, have someone monitoring, okaying, be the final, you know, person to whatever process it is.
Right. Crazy thing is, the CEO, guess how much he made last year?
Billion.
46 million. Mm. So he made 46 million. Now, mind you, that 46 million could have been dispersed around the 500 people. So I'm hoping that those people got good severances. I'm like, listen, give me a year of pay. Because this ain't like, y'all made a lot of money, he made a lot of money. The job market is kind of different. I need a good severance.
A year, I don't think nobody's getting that.
I heard some companies doing half a year, 6 months.
That's nice.
I got a friend, she got 4 months. So I was like, I'll take it. Because I was like, all I had was like 6 weeks and bonus paid 100%. And I was like, that wasn't enough.
Yeah.
Luckily, I was in grad school.
At least they was willing to do that. They getting real stingy these days with what they give in those packages.
But that's how you pretty much do insider threat. Because you treat people a certain way, I'm like, all right, if I'm going down, we all going down. For real.
And that's how a lot of people approach it as well.
Right. I don't blame them for it, because like, at the end of the day, you messing up my livelihood, and I was a top performer. Like, it'd be different like if these are the people that weren't doing work. These are some top performing people that got let go just because.
The market is ugly right now.
But yeah, I don't know. I've seen a lot of different things about that, and then you always have the routine people. To my friends at CrowdStrike, sorry. Now there are some good people that says, I got some jobs for you, like come here or whatever, or like, hey, these some individuals hire them. And I found I found a post that I screenshotted earlier, and it was hilarious to me. Let me see where it's at. Dude said, remember when CrowdStrike fired their QA team and then magically the biggest IT outage in history happened? This is a clownish decision made to boost stock price for investors. I really look forward to someone dethroning the king. Sentinel One just isn't making the moves, and Huntress is busy looking up Gen Z lingo. I would like to see more competition in the EDR space. That was funny to me because he said, I didn't know, I never researched that they laid off the QA team.
I don't remember that either. Might have passed me by.
I can look it up right now. Let's see.
The fact that it did stem from a bad update is still crazy to me. Still insane.
Yeah, so in 2023, CrowdStrike did lay off QA teams and other employees in 2023.
How many?
I don't know. It says specifically they laid off a few hundred people, including engineers, developers, and QA testers, citing a return to office excuse. While the company has also cited AI as a factor in the layoffs, economic and market uncertainty are also likely contributing to cuts. So, yeah.
If it ain't one thing, it's another. Like, it's the season again. I just feel like it seems like we're not going to be outside of this season of sporadic, random layoffs. I think that is what it is.
I think also, I feel like AI is only as good as the data it has. So, and also how good the prompts and the process is on the back end that's built for it.
The prompts for sure.
And AI only, it's like a program. It has to know exactly what to do. So it's not a human. A human can think outside the box. But AI, you got to tell it exactly what to do.
There's so many different components, levels, things on an AI perspective that folks just don't even know about, even kind of sometimes hard to even understand or even explain. It's not just ChatGPT.
Yeah. Not for sure. But that's why I think why I said they could miss the market. Like, I think they're good at the productivity stuff, but I just think when you really don't want to just solely focus on that and then takeaways, people that could do their job well, that probably would have caught, it would never been that big fiasco last year had you had those people. It's just one of those things where you're like,
lesson learned.
Get it together.
A big lesson learned. A lesson learned with the fine, lawsuits. Money will always teach you how to be better.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. So it's like, still, I think it's one thing I like. So we talked about this a while back. Of course, CrowdStrike shouldn't have that level of access to Windows. However, there should have been some better third-party risk management done by these companies that everyone is using CrowdStrike. So that's why, like, you can shift blame to CrowdStrike all you want to, but as a company, there's some stuff that the companies didn't do where they say, okay, what is this right here? And that's why the audits, and that's where GRC is actually important for. It's supposed to be for stuff like that. But going into our talk where we had last time about being technical, a non-technical person may not catch that based on the level of access that had. So I wonder, I got to actually go back and even look at how they found out CrowdStrike had that unprecedented level of access that no other EDR tool had and why nobody caught it before then. And what was the reasoning behind it versus it being like every other tool? But that's how I feel about the CrowdStrike layoffs. I mean, it's cool. I mean, I know some people that work there, but I just don't be thinking, hey, when you're the CEO, like making that much bread, like, do you really need that much?
According to them, they do.
They don't do nothing but make appearances and say stupid stuff. Like, if I was a CEO, he probably just busy all the time, like, strategizing. But by that time, it's not much. And they'll be there for a couple of years, and they'll go somewhere else and be a CEO. Make a lot of money. That's literally all they do.
I miss Undercover Boss.
You know what? I barely watched that show.
Really? I tore it up. Ate it down. I loved watching it. It was so good for people to see what's actually going on in their company. Mm-hmm.
So, I know you wanted to talk about this data breach at Connecticut. Well, Yale.
Let's see.
New Haven Health.
Yes. So, data breach at Connecticut's Yale New Haven Health affects over 5 million. A data breach at Connecticut's largest healthcare system, Yale New Haven Health, affects more than 5.5 million people, according to a legally required notice with the U.S. government's health department. Yale New Haven said the March cyber attack allowed malicious hackers to obtain copies of patients' personally identifiable information and some healthcare-related data. Per a notice on the healthcare system's website, the stolen data varies by person, but can include patients' names, date of births, postal and email addresses, phone numbers, race and ethnicity data, and social security numbers. The stolen data also includes information about types of patients and medical record numbers. Local media quoted the healthcare system's spokesperson as saying, "The number of infected individuals may change." When asked about the nature of the cyber attack by TechCrunch, Yale New Haven spokesperson Dana Marnay did not dispute that the incident was related to ransomware. "The sophistication of the attack led us to believe that it was executed by an individual or group who has a pattern of these type of incidents." Declining to further comment to TechCrunch, citing an ongoing law enforcement investigation. The healthcare provider declined to say if it had any communication with the hackers or if the hackers made a demand for payment. As of press time, no major ransomware group has publicly taken credit for the hack. It's not uncommon for ransomware and data extortion gangs to publish a victim's stolen files when negotiations to pay the ransom demand fail. This is the second major healthcare data breach confirmed this week after Blue Shield of California revealed its shared health data of 4.7 million patients with Google over several years. Yikes, 5 million people and counting. I would like to hear more about that when they have more updates on if it was ransomware.
Yeah. I know, like, I'll tell everybody right now that's listening, if you do healthcare and security, a lot of healthcare companies are hiring for security.
They should be. They absolutely should be, and they should be paying people a good salary to do it.
They are.
And they should have some good benefits and perks. Because I feel like every month last month we talked about, or last month, last year, we talked about Change Healthcare. More details, and the magnitude of that. And you just never want that to be your company.
No, for sure. I think I sent one of my friends a healthcare role for a director. Let me see paying.
That's one of those slept upon industries. It was sectors.
It's a director, detection and response company, healthcare system. Location is 100% remote. Salary was 230 through 260K base, reporting to the CISO.
Mood.
They out there.
They're definitely there.
True. Bradley Scott and White be paying good money. They just don't ever select nobody from the region when you apply.
Their application process is a bit yucky.
It's stupid. And I reached out to whoever the new leader is over there. But I was like, it's just a mess. But speaking of Change Healthcare, let's actually follow up on it.
Not there's more.
Oh, yeah. Reports. Change Healthcare cyber attack exposed data of 190 million people.
What? How many?
Oh, 190.
Wow.
So that's not the one I need then. Hang on real quick. There's one that broke down.
That number was not the number when we last talked about it.
Let me see. Is it? So I want to say it cost them $3.1 billion.
I feel like it need to cost more than that.
Let's see. The cost of poor cybersecurity. As the aftermath of Change Healthcare data breach has unfolded, the industry has witnessed mounting financial repercussions. Last month, United Healthcare updated its estimate of the breach impact, nearly doubling the once estimated 100 million to 190 million people whose data was affected. As the breach grew in scope, so did the financial and operational burden, with United Healthcare spending a staggering $3.1 billion in 2024 just to respond to the attack.
Just to respond. Just to respond.
However, the immediate fallout of the breach also hit individual providers particularly hard. Change processes 15 billion healthcare transactions annually. So the resulting outage post-breach caused significant delays in patient care due to disrupted operations, especially for smaller providers, ranging from revenue management services to delayed prescription filling. Through its temporary funding assistance program, UnitedHealth provided approximately $8.5 billion in loans. Given these steep recovery costs and the massive impact on patients, the Change breach highlighted cybersecurity as a critical business imperative for healthcare organizations.
I mean, yeah, HIPAA.
No, yeah. And that's the thing.
I don't understand why. Like, yeah.
Let me see if it's in my notes.
We know. It should be. They should treat the healthcare industry like they do the government industry. It should have the same.
Man, where is it? I put it in my notes.
It should be that tight-knit.
Because I was doing some studying.
But it's not.
Okay, December 2024, OCR proposed an update to the HIPAA security rule requiring stronger protection of patient data, including compliance audits, development of asset inventories and network maps, network segmentation, and mandatory multi-factor authentication.
Who said this?
OCR.
Occupational
Health. I don't know what it stands for. I was doing some research for, I'll tell you offline, but I was doing some research. And so whenever I'm doing research of stuff I want to propose or problems I want to solve, I just start putting down notes so I can get it together. Mm-hmm. And so that was the thing is like, these people have been so concerned with the operational thing of getting people in, making a lot of money and saving lives that they forget, hey, what'll stop all that? And I sent you and Lee Darknet Diaries of the dude talking about Marcus Hutchins, and they were saying how at the time WannaCry was crippling hospitals, so people couldn't get helped.
I just don't think that. I mean, maybe they do understand.
It's a risk they're willing to accept.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying.
When you can give out $8.5 billion in loans, you like, it's the thing, the reason why nobody cares is because it's a monopoly. So it's the reason why Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile don't have to worry about getting so much better. There's no fourth or fifth option that can literally take over for them. Like, it used to be parity because it used to be Verizon, Alltel, AT&T.
Oh my God,
T-Mobile, Alltel. Sprint. Yeah, because I had Alltel then. We got absorbed by Verizon. So it used to be all these different services. And then, of course, you had Boost Mobile and some other smaller ones. But at the time, it was more parity there. And they were trying to compete.
They were definitely competing, for sure. But when now you don't even see it like it used to. All the commercials, all that, like we used to. It was very shady.
For example, like the best and worst thing that happened for Apple iPhone is forcing Apple to turn on the RCS messaging.
That was the big,
because now they can't hide. Like they were the only thing for a lot of just regular people who don't care about techy stuff and phones was iMessage. Now that's pretty kind of alleviated for the most part with RCS and like using, like talking to Android phones, it's not a lot for them to hang their hat on, and they got to get back to business of actually making a new device that's not just almost the same as the last one.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why there's the benefit of when you actually have competition and not monopoly. With these healthcare, what you got, the biggest ones were Blue Cross, United Healthcare, what's it, Aetna?
Aetna.
And maybe somewhere else. I might be forgetting one. But, hey, you know what? We got all these deals. It's like drugs, to be honest. They be talking about Franklin Saint them and Ghost. That's the real money right there.
Definitely.
Like, hey, these hospitals, we're going to be a provider. Y'all going to take our insurance.
No ifs, ands, ors.
Y'all going to take it.
Buts.
And companies, y'all got to figure out what y'all want to pay. But, hey, we raising our premiums, too.
It's definitely them premiums, not even explaining to people clearly what they're getting themselves into, not having a representative to help answer questions. I've worked at some places, though, who did a pretty decent job mm-hmm. at breaking it down, and I think that those were in-house tools that were developed to make sure employees knew what they were signing up for versus it being I've worked at places that just said pick a plan and that's it. No more details.
Shoot, I know. I mean, I had to pick my first Fun fact for the people that are watching right now, put in the comments when you got your first job and when you had to first fill out for your first like benefits package. I ain't know none of that stuff. I'll
call my mom.
I'm like, what is this?
Same. I remember filling out my W-4, calling my mom. What I'm supposed to put? Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, I ain't got no kids, so I'm finna pick the cheapest one. Until you actually got to go to the hospital.
Until you actually need medical care.
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah, sir. Because I had to have surgery on my thumb in 2017. I was like, yeah, you know, that's cool, but you got to pay $500 before you come in here. I was like, all right. Well, that was so difficult. My thumb was so nasty looking.
What happened to it?
Ball is life.
Please.
Back when I was kidless, I used to play basketball like 2 times a week.
And the ball hit it or my something, or it broke?
Hit. I was going for the ball, and my thumb hit somebody's knee. No, and man. So it was like weird.
It was broke.
It wasn't broken. It was just, I messed up a joint or something in it. And when I would sleep at night sometimes, I could feel it hurting. And then I went to the hand doctor. He was like, yeah, we got to fix this. And so
they broke it? Mm. How was that healing?
It wasn't bad. I just had to use his hand a lot. Like when I had to.
It's your dominant hand?
Yeah, this is my dominant hand.
That's the worst.
Well, you know what? I mean, I still was typing. I was at work just typing with my left hand. And I had to put like a grocery bag on my arm.
So it didn't get wet. You don't realize how much you use a limb or whatever until you can't use it.
But I was actually happy in the sense that it made me get better with my left hand.
Mm-hmm.
So
you was like, both-handed?
Yeah. According to Improvider State of Third-Party Access and Cybersecurity report, 47% of the 1,900 respondents experienced a data breach or cyber attack at their organization in the past year that involved a third party accessing their network. Additionally, 64% of respondents believe these type of third-party breaches will either increase or remain at alarming levels over the next 1 to 2 years. Healthcare organizations must treat cybersecurity as a critical business priority, and investing in cyber strategy that truly leverages zero trust architecture will at least minimize the damage done if attackers breach the perimeter, if not prevent the attack altogether. According to the same report, the most significant consequences of cyber attacks stemming from third-party access were the loss or theft of sensitive and confidential information, 53%, regulatory fines, 50%, and severed relationships with the affected third-party or vendor, 49%. It's definitely, So yeah, I got this from the same article.
Why did you laugh?
Because I was wondering where did I pull that stat about OCR from. And so I realized it was this article. So I had just copied it and threw it in notes.
How serious everybody knows HIPAA is, I just don't understand why it's not being abided by.
Well, they never envisioned it. They never thought about security when they made it. I mean, they sense of patient data, but they didn't think about it.
They didn't think that it was going to blow. Yeah, like this. Or even technology would be so advanced. Or that medical records would even be as electronic as they were, because they haven't always been. Yeah. So that, like you said, that wasn't a big thing. You remember going to the doctor's office and they got the big old file cabinets.
Yeah, now you just get a notification.
Now they got the tablet. Chart. Exactly. Now they got a tablet.
But, I mean, like I said, security is always an afterthought.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not an if, but it's a when. And then that's when you want to hire everybody.
Say it again. It's not if, but when.
That might be the name of the episode. It's not if, but when.
Yes.
I don't know. I think that. Every time, I think this goes in waves. We'll see some more industries that's struggling, and then it's going to be the same way for them.
Yeah. I'm surprised that we haven't seen a lot from the manufacturing industry. Oil and gas. What are they doing?
I know a lot of
this. Are they doing it right?
I think a lot of this stuff is more with OT, SCADA, and all that type of stuff. So I know, for the most part, they are making sure that's done right, because they don't want to lose the money, for sure.
Can't afford to have the line shut down.
Think about it. And that's just on the digital end. Like, I didn't watch Landman, even though it's not as accurate, but hey.
I haven't seen that.
It's pretty good. It's with Billy Bob Thornton, and they're down there in West Texas, where all the oil and stuff is. It actually seems like it's an extension of, I don't know if you ever seen Friday Night Lights, like the movie, not the show.
The football?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like football movies.
It kind of feel like it's an extension of that. I don't know. I think it'd be good. Since we kind of talked about this, I guess you may want to talk about Delta, the lawsuit over the CrowdStrike outage.
Yes. Okay, so U.S. judge rules Delta will face passenger lawsuit over CrowdStrike outage. U.S. District Judge Mark Cohen in Atlanta said five of the nine plaintiffs may pursue breach of contract claims based on Delta's failure to refund. The judge allowed a different group of five plaintiffs to pursue claims related to delayed and canceled flights under the Montreal Convention, a multilateral treaty. The July 19, 2024 outage stemmed from a flawed software update from cybersecurity company CrowdStrike that crashed more than 8 million computers and affected many Microsoft customers. Disruptions eased the next day for many U.S. airlines but lasted longer at Delta, which canceled about 7,000 flights. This ruling is a major step forward for Delta passengers seeking accountability. Joseph Sonder, a lawyer for some of the plaintiffs, said in an email, neither Delta nor its lawmakers immediately responded to requests for comment. The Atlanta-based carrier had sought the dismissal of all claims, aside from one refund claim, an international traveler's claim under the Montreal Convention. Passengers accused Delta of failing to provide automatic refunds following the outage and providing partial refunds only if they waived further legal claims. One plaintiff, John Brennan of Florida, said he and his wife missed a $10,000 anniversary cruise after Delta stranded them in an Atlanta layover, yet the carrier offered just $219.45 in compensation. Another plaintiff, Another plaintiff, Vittorio Muzzi of the Netherlands, said he spent 5,000 euros, which is the equivalent to $5,685, and his luggage was delayed 15 days after Delta scrapped his flight to Florida from Amsterdam, yet the carrier offered just $699 in compensation. Delta has estimated that the outage cost $550 million in lost revenue and added costs while saving $500 million of fuel. That's the end. I think that they should.
That's tough.
I think that there should be a notion to where people are traveling to. Like, I saw something on TikTok where this girl had a layover, and if she didn't make it, she wouldn't be able to go say goodbye to her granddad who was passing away actively. So I feel like you just never know what people are doing. You never know where people are going, and I feel like that needs to be kept in mind. Those little tiny $200, $300, and you miss a $10,000 trip, and the cruise ship not waiting for you. You don't get any of that back. I just think that there should be more thought given or provided, put into that process.
No, for sure. So I while you were talking, I looked up, hey, why did it take Delta so long to recover? And a lot of these PC answers are saying, like, oh, complex network infrastructure, yada, yada, yada. Truth be told, it's probably because some of that stuff was outdated.
For sure.
And they did not have a proper incident response team, or I actually say incident management because it wasn't a cyber attack. But this is a wide-scale incident to where they should have been able to recover much faster. And I feel like between CrowdStrike and them, and
they were down,
other unnamed third parties, somebody should send the money.
Global X. I think that it sucks. I can't imagine missing a significant trip like that.
Yeah.
Then just being SOL, like, completely. And here's $300. Sorry.
And so now I wonder, like, when it comes to transportation, the airline industry, are they going to have regulations now about, we see less attacks like this on Linux? Like, is everybody going to be moving to Linux? Or are we going to be all on Windows? We're going to be on Mac OS? So it's interesting to see. I didn't really think about that, but that may be something to talk about in a future episode about the airline industry, or transportation specifically, the airline industry. How do they make sure that doesn't happen again?
Yep.
And what are they doing to stay ahead of the game and be proactive versus being reactive like that happened with the update that went out? Something I found that's a little more lighthearted and interesting, stuff I like to talk about, LinkedIn post from Miss Madeline Machado. She says, "Now I fear we are actually cooked. I saw a job description the other day that straight up said, must know how to spot ChatGPT resumes. We're here. We're in the part of the cycle I knew was coming. First, everyone jumped on AI resume builders because they were fast, free, and the future. Then hiring managers and recruiters started to get overwhelmed. Everything looked the same. Now they're actively screening for AI-generated resumes. The problem was never just about formatting or keywords. The real issue is there aren't enough jobs, and the more AI floods the system, the harder it becomes to stand out. Especially even your resume gets automated into oblivion. We don't need another AI resume. We need real opportunities. Also, is anyone else concerned about the mental health impact of trying to keep up with all this? Like, seriously, what's happening?" And I feel like she wrote that with AI too, because look at his dash at the end.
Absolutely. Like, that
last sentence. I need that job. I need to spot it. But no, I was saying that on.
You can tell.
What was that? I know it was the episode we did with Hacker Proof, but I'm trying to see if I said it somewhere else. I want to say one of the videos I recorded this week, but like the resumes are looking the same because everybody's using AI. They'll probably use the same tool to generate the resume.
Yeah. You can tell though. You can tell.
Yeah, it's too formal, and it's in a way that doesn't sound like a normal person talks. That's all the time, like, AI does that. And I was like, even a lot of the AI tools that's trying to help tailor and stuff, don't do it right the right way. They're just taking a job description and probably rewording it.
And people aren't even going over it. They're just taking what AI gives mm-hmm. them, and they're like, yep. Better than what I had, and moving forward, you need to refine that. You need to take a look. You need to make sure you know what it says, first of all.
That's a big.
You need to make sure you know what it says.
That's even without an AI resume, just making sure you know what your resume says.
Yeah.
Because you're getting there to ask you something. And that happened to me before. Like, I got my resume done. It was a bullet point in there. I was like, I don't know why this is in here, and I should have took this out beforehand. But I was like, hey, I don't know how to do that. I was like, I told him straight up. I said, I had got my resume done.
I'm screaming.
I'm for real. I was like, listen, I wouldn't have put that on there. That don't make sense for me. And so I fixed it and took it out after that. But I was like, that was crazy. Funny thing, though, is she made the same sentiment on her TikTok. And people was like, but you was pushing us to use this AI app and stuff like that. But she's like, I mean, yeah, I was, but not now because, like, how things have went. So
you can tell absolutely without a doubt they are looking the same, sounding the same.
Man, if I can go back and find that AI joint that the dude showed me the time he was just pretty much fabricated his whole like experience, you would definitely see the problem here when it comes to AI. Because also the resumes still aren't good because AI is doing them, because it's not telling the story.
That's what I was just about to say. If you already weren't telling the story, then AI is going to tell the same story that it's helping other people tell, especially in certain industries, certain roles.
Okay. I never read the comments, but this was what Courtney Moore says. She says, "You know, as well as I know, we've leveled the playing field. Minorities, people of color, people without access to career coaches or resume writers now have the ability to use AI for their advantage, and now that's deemed unfair. I use AI every day for everything from planning my groceries to more complex tasks like improving my writing and organizing my thoughts so I can communicate clearly and effectively." That's really not a complex task for AI, but that's just me. "It's no different what an assistant, a PR firm, or a resume writer would do. Tools that many," and she used AI on this too, "tools that many privileged individuals have had access to. The only time it becomes problematic is when people feel threatened by the same access being extended to those of us who've never had it. I didn't grow up in a family that talked about resumes, entrepreneurship, or career strategy. If I hadn't actually sought out knowledge, I wouldn't even know what a strong resume looked like." And that's the key. You sought out the knowledge.
I sympathize with that in a way, because that is true. Because back in the day, I mean, you thought your resume was good. Nobody was going to tell you it was bad unless you knew somebody to connect with. So I think that is, it does make things more accessible. And when things become more accessible and they're no longer gatekept, then it's a bit harder to, you know, everyone's kind of, if everybody know how to do it, then how do you pick?
Facts. And I think I see what they're saying, but it's really not the same thing. Because, like I said, if you didn't know what a good resume was before AI, you sure don't know with AI if it's a good resume. So just because AI make it look nice,
it's but like, that's what it is. It makes you feel like it because it's better than what you had.
Yeah,
people will assume that. Okay, bet this is it. This is the one.
And I actually got a guy. He has a company. Well, I've actually reviewed some of the stuff that it comes up with. So that's one of the things that we talk about. Is like, how does it differentiate itself from the other people that are using, you know, your LOM to make their resumes and stuff? So that's something I'm going to ask them because people want to know. Because I mean, nobody mind paying, but hey, it got to be worth it.
Exactly. But like I said, and that was a lucrative, you know, spot to be before AI boomed. People was really getting money because they knew what they were doing, and your resume wasn't going to sound like her resume and his resume. Yeah.
And vice versa, like AI don't know how to ask questions when doing a resume. And I'll elaborate on that. If I know you've been a system administrator for 5 years, yet you probably only have like 2-3 bullets on here and like a couple of skills, I'm going to say, hey, I know you did more stuff than this. Name me, you know, give me your brags. AI doesn't know to ask that unless you tell it to say, hey, ask this person.
And that's another thing. Give me your achievements. You can't just, if you just say, make this better and go with that without asking it for any input or context on how you can improve, then yeah, you're just going to get that blank canvas because it always has questions. So if you're not questioning it on what additional information it needs from you to help you tell the best story, you are doing yourself a disservice.
No, that's facts. But I mean, let me see what some more, if you got any more juicy comments, because I feel y'all. I didn't even chime in on this because it was a week old. Gosh, I don't really care if someone uses AI to write their resume if it still looks good and realistic, especially when so many blogs are telling people to tailor their resume to each job listing they apply for. How much effort can we expect from people who are having to apply for thousands of jobs to get a couple of interviews? Interesting. Not trying to be negative or combative, but I'm curious if the same company that wants to weed out AI resumes also uses AI to scan through those same resumes. If so, it seems a bit hypocritical to me. You can't expect candidates to not use it if you look it up for your own issue. Sorry if this isn't extremely articulate, but I think you understand. And I think that's the key.
I don't think you should punish people for that. Now, I could see if you can clearly tell, like, none of this is, they fabricated the bullet points.
That's what I'm talking about.
They fabricated the impact that they had. You know, you can tell the numbers, the metrics, 100%, 99%, you know, and 80%. Nobody's doing that.
Somebody asked me that one time. I was like, how'd you do that? I was like, hey, I just did it when they asked about the metrics. But no.
I just did it. It's funny.
In seriousness, if your resume looks like a job description, that could be a telltale sign too. So I had a guy, let me see if I can find Jermaine's post. Jermaine made a post and he was just telling people about the ABC formula when it comes to resumes. And I chimed in on it. And let me see, because that guy had been like responding to me for a while. And I just like, bro, what are you talking about? Because I always tell people, hey, like when I'm responding to things career related, I'm coming from a spot of actually helping people do this for a long time. Not a person just like individual like experience. I'm talking about what I've experienced with working with hundreds of people at this time, hundreds of calls. You know, routinely, most people would have the call have the same issue. Let me see. I think he was on the beach when he made this picture. So here it is. If your resume still sounds like a job description, that's your first problem. I wish I knew how to do the patois accent for him. Because
patois.
Yeah. Here's how to use your XYZ formula to flip weak, vague bullet points into cold, hard proof that you get results. Let's talk about what it is, how to use it right, and how to diversify your metrics so every line hits. This is how I write resumes. What is the XYZ formula? It's simple. Did X by doing Y, which resulted in Z. That's it. It forces you to be clear about your impact, not just your responsibilities. No fluff, no filler, just results. And I need to say this loud and clear. Stop leaning on percentages like they're the only way to show value. Every bullet on your resume shouldn't end in increase by X% or reduce by Y%.
Prime example. That's exactly how you know. Because every single bullet got some crazy impact in it.
There are so many other ways to measure. There are so many other ways to measure impact. Time saved, hours reduced, people trained, revenue generated, headcount supported, processes improved, cost avoided, before after comparisons, error rates lowered, user action or adoption, customer satisfaction. Mix it up, show range, prove you're multidimensional. Some examples for engineers: wrong. Built internal tools. Right. Built three internal tools that automated QA processes, cutting manual testing time by 12 hours weekly and freeing up dev cycles. Wrong. Support migration to AWS. Right. Migrated 12 backend systems to AWS with zero downtime, improving site reliability and saving $45,000 in annual cloud spend. For product managers, wrong. On product roadmap. Right. Led roadmap execution for a B2B SaaS product used by 18,000 users, launching five features that directly drove a 15% increase in daily engagement. So, I mean, hey, he's been on this whole, like...
Who is he?
It's the job father, Jermaine Jupiter. Mm.
I like that. I want to read
He definitely going to hit you with a Wagwan. He'll probably come on and say Wagwan. He's been on the show a couple times. Like, so my comment was, just said this thing on a consult yesterday, except I called it the ABC formula. People are telling people to copy bullet points from job descriptions and rewrite them on resumes. And I said, just shaking my head.
Yeah, they probably seen that bullet point 16 times already.
Let's see. Maybe he deleted his stuff. He had to. But he had to delete stuff because he was like talking to me like as if it had something to do. Like what he was posting about was like he got a job and then it got like, you know, rescinded after he started. I'm like, that's not the same thing we're talking about. We're talking about people that's not even getting screener interviews. And he was just, you know, going his way, you know, white tears. You know how they get. But NSO Group must pay more than $167 million in damages to WhatsApp.
Let's talk about it.
Because I remember when that happened, spyware for WhatsApp.
This is a long article. Okay, so we have spyware maker NSO Group will have to pay more than $167 million in damages to WhatsApp for a 2019 hacking campaign against more than 1,400 users.
Wow.
On Tuesday, after a five-year legal battle, a jury ruled that NSO Group must pay $1,674,000 in punitive damages and around $444,719 in compensatory damages. This is a huge legal win for WhatsApp, which has asked for more than $400,000 in damages based on the time its employees had to dedicate to remediate the attacks, investigate them, and push fixes to patch the vulnerability abused by the NSO group, as well as unspecified punitive damages. WhatsApp spokesperson Zaid said in a statement that our court case has made history as the first victory against illegal spyware that threatens the safety and privacy of everyone. The ruling is an important step forward for privacy and security as the first victory against the development and use of illegal spyware that threatens the safety and privacy of everyone. Today, the jury's decision to force NSO, a notorious foreign spyware merchant, to pay damages is a critical deterrent to this malicious industry against their illegal acts aimed at American companies and the privacy and security of the people we serve. NSO Group spokesperson Gail Lanier left the door open for an appeal. We will carefully examine the verdict's details and pursue appropriate legal remedies, including further proceedings and an appeal. The trial, as well as the whole lawsuit, prompted a series of revelations, such as the location of the victims of the 2019 spyware campaign, as well as the names of some of NSO Group's customers. The ruling marks the end, pending a potential appeal, of a legal battle that started more than 5 years ago when WhatsApp filed a lawsuit against the spyware maker. The Meta-owned company accused NSO Group of accessing WhatsApp servers and exploiting an audio calling vulnerability in the chat app to target around 1,400 people, including dissidents, human rights activists, and journalists.
I don't even know what a dissident is.
What is that? Well, the head of WhatsApp explained the lawsuit reasoning in a Washington Post op-ed at the time, where he said that this should serve as a wake-up call for technology companies, governments, and all internet users. Tools that enable surveillance into our private lives are being abused, and the proliferation of this technology into the hands of irresponsible companies and governments puts us all at risk. Last December, WhatsApp won. Judge Phyllis Hamilton, who presided over the case, ruled that the NSO group was liable for breaching federal and California hacking laws in its 2019 spyware campaign against the 1,400 WhatsApp users. The judge ruled that NSO group was also liable for breaching WhatsApp's terms of service, which prohibit the use of the app for malicious purposes. Let's see. At that point, the case moved to a jury trial to determine what damages the software company owed WhatsApp, which is now concluded. A senior researcher at Citizen Lab, John Scott Roten, where he has studied the spyware industry for more than a decade, celebrated the ruling. This is an incredible moment for those of us who have been around since the beginning of research on mercenary spyware. NSO makes millions of dollars helping dictators hack people. After years of every trick and delay tactic, it only took the jury a day's deliberation to see right through to the head of the matter. NSO's business is based on hacking American companies so that dictators can hack dissidents. The company emerges from this trial severely damaged. Aside from the huge punitive damages, the bigger impact of this case has also been a huge blow to NSO's efforts to hide their business activities. What is a dissident?
So a dissident is a person who opposes official policy, especially that of an authoritarian state. So that's why I said dictator. So it's kind of like the context clues there. But I had never heard the actual term a dissident.
I feel like I've heard it, but I've never seen it in text.
So all the watchers, I want y'all to write that 5 times each and use it in a sentence and put it in the comments. That's how. Do kids still do that?
No.
They don't write stuff like.
No, three not times, as a punishment.
No, not a punishment.
I used to do it for trouble.
No, see, we used to just do it because that was a way to help us retain our spelling words, write anything. So
yeah, I feel like it's important for you to also practice your penmanship as a kid. It's very important.
Kids don't even learn how to write in cursive anymore.
I bought a cursive book off Amazon. I have to learn how to write my new last name in Spanish, or Spanish, Lord, in cursive. I don't know all the letters anymore. No, it don't look right. That's why I got to practice. Mm-hmm. I don't know all the letters.
Yeah. I forget how to make a Q. I think I remember a Z.
A Q, a Z.
Angle, but I think like.
I mean, you can make any letter be whatever you want and make it be your version of cursive, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I saw something that said that on TikTok, like, the kids don't learn how to write in cursive, so they're not going to really be able to read history no more. You know, all that stuff.
It was absolutely in cursive. In the, have you ever went to look, or did you ever have to do research at the archives ever in your life?
I don't think so.
When I took AP history, we had to go.
That's why you said
go.
AP history.
Yeah. And it was all in cursive for sure.
You'd be like, man, what is this? Let me see. Oh, I think, did I open it up? Okay. Educational giant Pearson hit by cyber attack exposing customer data. Education giant Pearson suffered a cyber attack allowing threat actors to steal corporate data and customer information, Bleeping Computer has learned. Pearson is a UK-based education company and one of the world's largest providers of academic publishing, digital learning tools, and standardized assessments. The company works with schools, universities, and individuals in over 70 countries through its print and online services. In a statement to Bleeping Computer, Pearson confirmed they suffered a cyber attack and that data was stolen, but stated it was mostly legacy data. We recently discovered that an unauthorized actor gained access to a portion of our systems. Once we identified the activity, we took steps to stop it and investigate what happened and what data was affected with forensics experts. We also supported law enforcement's investigation. We have taken steps to deploy additional safeguards onto our systems, including enhancing security monitoring and authentication. That means translation. They got threat hunts going on for the next 24, 72, maybe a week hours. And they, around the clock, they got, well, you can automate it. It depends on whatever sim you use. Once you got the the query, you can make it run like every hour or something like that to see if you see any activity. So that's what they got going on for the people that would want to know what that's like in the incident. Pearson also confirmed that the stolen data did not include employee information.
Well, good for them. Okay.
Well, that's a plus. But it didn't really say like exactly what happened. So I wonder what happened.
It said it was a PAT.
It said it was a what?
A PAT, personal access token.
I'm gonna look at it.
Scroll down.
I know they said once we identified the activity. Oh, this, you know what? You're right. So I was thinking this was a separate article that exposed GitLab token. This statement comes after sources told Bleeping Computer that threat actors compromised Pearson's developer's environment in January through an exposed GitLab personal access token found in a public.git config file. A Git config file is a local configuration file used by Git projects to store configuration settings such as project name, email address, and other information. If this file is mistakenly exposed and contains access tokens embedded in remote URLs, it can give attackers unauthorized access to internal repositories. In the attack on Pearson, the exposed token allowed the threat actors to access the company's source code, which contained further... That's crazy. contained further...
Insane.
That's the issue. Further hard-coded credentials and authentication tokens for... That's the issue.
They don't have anything scanning to let them know that it's there either. So I'm sure they probably purchased something to do that now.
That's crazy. That's crazy. Them funny thing need Wiz. Y'all need Wiz, Pearson. But that's interesting, though.
I just like how it says... Pearson previously disclosed in January they were investigating a breach of one of their subsidiaries, which is believed to be related to this attack. Yikes. So, yeah. It started there and it ended here. Year-old critical FAA air traffic control system unsustainable, U.S. Transportation Security says. The U.S. Department of Transportation... DOT announced a new $3.2 billion in grants on Tuesday, many for technology upgrades at various airports nationwide. Still, Newark Liberty International Airport, which serves as the ultra-busy New York City metro area, has been forced to cancel hundreds of flights this week, is nowhere on the list. That's because U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy announced on Tuesday he and President Trump will soon be introducing a plan to radically transform and replace the entire outdated Federal Aviation Administration's air traffic control system with a brand new one, one that Duffy said will be the envy of the world. FAA failed to overhaul 50-year-old systems. Duffy began posting a slew of scathing posts on X this week, slamming the Biden administration for ignoring the need for critical technology overhaul of the entire national airspace system. On Tuesday, Duffy posted several damning excerpts from a 20-page December 2024 report by the Government Accountability Office revealing the FAA has been slow to modernize some of the most critical and at-risk systems. While considering age, sustainability ratings, operational impact level, and expected date of modernization or replacement for each system, as of May 2024, the FAA has 17 systems that were especially concerning, it said. And overall, Duffy noted the watchdog warned more than a third of Americans, 138 air traffic control systems were outdated, unsustainable, and lacked spare parts. And then there's just like some tweets.
I'm not surprised.
I just feel like working as air traffic control is stressful. I don't even... I texted my godmom the other day and told her...
Yes, she does?
No, I just texted her and told her I was interested in learning more. And then I just changed my mind. It sounds really stressful. Lots of lives are your responsibility to ensure they're flying through clear air. And just the idea, knowing what I know, using that technology, I wouldn't feel good about it.
Yeah. I have found It was something. It was like some funny stuff, but I had bookmarked some stuff. X, because I'm always finding something interesting that's relevant to the show. Like, one thing I bookmarked was like, I don't know if they're an IR person, but they was like, did you know that most incident responders have a sixth sense? It's called, this log looks weird and I don't know why yet. And I was like, that's typically, that's how it is. We were doing a training and it was just my shift. And so we initially get in there, you don't really get a lot of stuff to go off of. And so I'm just looking at stuff and I'm like, that don't look right. So that's one of the things we got. He was like, yeah, congratulations, man. Say, we all know that a lot of threat hunting and investigation is a lot of luck. It's like, so it's like good to be rather a lot lucky than right. But I always look at stuff where if you were in an interview and they were actually like, how would you look into some possible malicious or suspicious traffic or activity on a host? You probably want to pay attention to something that doesn't make have the most activity. So let's say this service account got like 3,000 event codes, but then there's this other account, that particular that got like 10 events. You want to probably drill down to that 10 events first because
it's kind of easier odd.
Because what happens a lot may be normal. So we was able to do that, and then we started triangulate like who got compromised and lateral movement. It was a lot of fun. That's the good stuff when you can actually learn like that with platforms where the training is better. I don't like the, all right, guys, we're going to be in this big trainer group and, you know, listen to me talk from these spreadsheets and this is what we're going to do. I don't like that. I don't learn that good like that. Just give me the labs. That's what I learned. But it was that one, and it was another guy I was talking about. Jack Rossider was talking about.
Zachary. Is it Zachary?
No, it was Jack. Jack Rossider. He was like, name one case where a hacker went to court on federal charges and won. And then this guy was like, it's probably time we retire VPNs. There are much better options now, like Zscaler and Tailscale and others. The rate at which these VPN appliances are being attacked and exploited doesn't seem to be slowing down. And it said the exploitation of vulnerabilities has seen another year of growth as an initial access vector for breaches reaching 20%. This value approaches that of credential abuse, which is still the most common vector. This was an increase of 34% in relation to last year's report and was supported in part by zero-day exploits targeting edge devices and virtual private networks. The percentage of edge devices and VPNs as a target on our exploitation of vulnerabilities action was 22%, and it grew almost eightfold from the 3% found in last year's report. Organizations work very hard to patch those edge devices vulnerabilities, but our analysis showed only about 54% of those were fully remediated throughout the year, and it took a median of 32 days to accomplish. Interesting. But this other one is about this tech support scam. I guess you probably will come across on Chrome. And so I want to go into it. Google Chrome to use on-device Google Chrome to use on-device AI to detect tech support scams. Google is implementing a new Chrome security feature that uses the built-in Gemini Nano large language model to detect and block tech support scams while browsing the web. Tech support scams are malicious websites that trick users into thinking their computer has a virus, infection, or other problem. These alerts are shown as full-screen browser windows or will display additional pop-ups, making them difficult to close. The goal is to convince the victim to call a listed number for help, to either sell unnecessary remote support subscriptions or gain remote access to devices, which can lead to financial losses or data theft. I low-key.
This just happened to me recently.
Did you call the number?
Absolutely not.
No, we should be on camera one day and call the number.
No, I didn't. It was some type of pop-up or something. And I visited the wrong site. It was like .co or something. Like I was typing too fast. Mm-hmm. And wherever it took me, that thing would not stop popping up. It was driving me. I can see how, from if you're untrained, how it can make you panic. But I wasn't panicking. I was just trying to stop the alert.
Guys, we're gonna call the number one day. From a Google voice number or something, and just have fun with it. Cause you can already tell the number 1-855. The thing said Windows smart screen preventing an unrecognized app from starting running. This app might put your PC at risk for technical support. Call on. And this thing used to be bigger than this back in the day. Like, this is the main thing they was doing to try to get people. Google Home 126 to power AI features directly with the browser for faster privacy-focused assistance. Chrome's new anti-scam system, which is integrated into the browser's enhanced protection, analyzes web pages in real time to detect scam signals like fake virus alerts or full-screen lockouts, which are hallmarks of tech support scams. This analysis takes place offline locally on a user's device using Gemini Nano. When there's a positive match, the data is sent to Google Safe Browsing for a more thorough evaluation. If malicious intent is confirmed, Chrome will display a warning message informing the user of the risk. Yep, and do that on your phone now, too. Just a nice little diagram of how the LLM is helping. Google says the feature respects users' privacy and has only a minimal performance impact, though not many details were given in the announcement. This is all done in a way that preserves performance and privacy. In addition to ensuring that LLM is only triggered sparingly and run locally on device, we carefully manage resource consumption by considering the number of tokens used, running the process asynchronously to avoid interrupting browser activity, and implementing throttling and quota enforcement mechanisms to limit GPU usage. I gotta stop trying to read so fast. I think about my daughter Zelly. We'd be like, all right, you can say the words if you just close your mouth and say them. I'm reading so fast, so I'm not closing my mouth in between the words and it coming out funny. The AI Power Protection feature will be implemented on Chrome 137, scheduled for release next week, and it will be enabled by default on all users who upgrade to the latest version and opt into enhanced protection within the browser safe browsing settings. So cool. That's pretty much it, but I like that feature because it can help out. Like on my phone, which is weird, it was telling me it didn't trust some sites, but these were sites that was coming up in my Google Home feed that I actually want to read. So that was pretty interesting to me, but I felt like we should probably cover that one when it came to just why, like, at least Chrome is doing that and helping users out.
Letting them know.
But, giving them, I mean, a little, we definitely, I just want to call them because I want to see if it's going to be like the beekeeper.
I'm screaming.
Hold on.
Let me pay the different one.
Like, I ain't even get the job.
Yes. Here we go.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining the interview today. I am so excited to talk to you and get to know more about you. For our first question, let's circle back. Tell me about a time when, let's circle back. Tell me about a time when, let's circle back. Tell me about a time when, let's.
I think the internet's breaking up or something.
Tell me about a time when, let's circle back. Tell me about a time when, let's. Interview. Thank you so much for answering the questions. I got a lot of great information.
I need to answer a question.
And it was really nice to meet you. We will be sending you a follow-up email here shortly about the interview and the next steps.
What? I can't even. There has to be a human.
You should give me the
human,
job to have to even deal with that.
There has to be a human element in the process. There, that is too. You are automatically declining people, and the tool ain't working how it's supposed to work. It's crazy.
Right, and I don't like the ones where you apply to a job and an AI recruiter sends you a text message.
A text.
I probably can't even find a message in my phone.
I was trying to find the other one.
Let's see. AI recruiter.
Another one.
Pilates, vertical bar 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 Pilates, I Pilates, vertical bar Pilates, vertical bar Pilates, vertical bar
I hope that that is not going to be the future of what folks can expect. And I wonder if those are the companies that don't want AI resumes.
Good question. So here's one. This is the same woman who linked the post I read. This is her on TikTok.
Okay, don't shoot the messenger, but it needs to be said. Y'all need to stop looking for remote jobs. If you have not been working remotely for the majority of your career, and you're also not top talent, finding a remote job is just going to be impossible in this job market. Working remotely before used to be like a luxury. Like, no one ever did that. That was like, oh my god, that's so fancy. And then when COVID happened, it became a requirement. Like, if you had to have a job, you could not go in office. You were working remotely. Then slowly, companies started doing RTO, and then all the layoffs happened, and companies that hire remote are very few and far between. And can I just say, when companies are remote, you have a lot higher likelihood of being laid off. You are in for a very long and drawn out job search if the only jobs you're looking for are remote. So do yourself a favor and start looking for some hybrid roles. Even if it's just temporary, like, think of it as like, this is just something I'm gonna do until I get that remote job. Thinking you're going to tailor your resume with ChatGPT and pivot careers or industries and get a six-figure remote job with barely any experience is delusional. I'm all for delusion. That's like a different level of delusion that I just can't support. My clients are the exception to that rule because most of them do land remote jobs. But if you're not one of my clients, then maybe you're just delusional. Okay.
I agree with her. I definitely agree with her.
She used to be a recruiter at Meta, I believe. But speaking of that, just made me think about something. When I think about these CrowdStrike layoffs, how many people that were laid off stayed in Austin? And I think they got some other presence somewhere else, but the offices, one of the offices is in Austin. So if you in office, a lot of times you may not get laid off most of the time with the whole deal stuff. So that just reminded me of that. So I'm like,
you definitely can't limit your job search. Your job search right now to remote only work. Roles. The market is quite interesting, and would absolutely be limiting yourself.
Yeah. I tell clients that all the time, like, look,
people don't want to hear it, though.
I was somebody that was talking about that. I was like, unless you have a disability where you physically cannot drive or go into office, like, you don't have the choice. And a lot of y'all need to be in the office anyway. Y'all not going to get none done.
I do think that there's a lot of value of going into the office. You know, like we talked about before, being able to turn around and ask a question or listen in on something, a conversation, a meeting, or whatever it is that may not be necessarily privy to what you're working on, but just soaking up on that knowledge from your peers that are around you.
Yeah, but I also think the office needs to be set up in a way that's conducive for people to work in the office.
Absolutely. I agree with you. You should have a great culture in office if that's what, if that's the vibes.
I don't want to be in a cubicle where we like this and you don't feel like you got any type of privacy from me. It's like, I can look over you anytime because the thing is this low.
Yeah.
I don't like those type at the office. I like at least my own little.
I like desks that go up and down.
Yeah.
That's important.
I remember they added them in our sock and McAfee just to lay us off the next month. I said, yes, man, all this money on this new sock just to lay us off. And the building is empty now. So they got the instant karma. And then this one was some guy. He said, day in the life for IT professionals. So he reenacted the conversation he just had with a user.
You can't make this shit up. Literally, a dramatization of the phone call I just got. Hey, I need a password to get on the internet so I can work from home. I'm sorry? Yeah, I need the password to get on the internet so I can work from home, you know, to get on the network. You mean your home network? Like your Wi-Fi? You would have that password. I wouldn't have that. No. I know that. I mean, like, I need the password to get on the network at work. What's that password? Okay, so you're supposed to use your own internet to get on the internet and then click that icon on your desktop and it takes you to the VPN. Then you're on the network. Right, but what's the password to the internet itself? I don't know your home internet password. I have no clue what that is. So how am I supposed to get on the internet? It's your internet. How do you not know how to? You can't make this.
Hey, they used to be like that too. They'll call in. Hey, I can't. Something ain't loading up. Are you connected to the internet? Like, as simple as this question sound, that's an important question to ask an end user. I don't think so. Can you help me out with that? No. Call Comcast. That's not in the scope of our duties. We focus on what's on your computer. Not that. We can help you connect to VPN. But you got issues with your home network, that's out of scope. You better call them.
Better hope they got a resolution too, because they are scheduling an appointment for the next day, day after.
What's the term? ID10?
ITN by 10?
ID10T. It's pretty much a way to say idiot. Like, it's like a little IT joke. Because most of the time, that's like the issue. It's always a user error most of the time. That's why it's good to say, did you turn off and turn it back on?
And that's why when you already done did that and you call them and they want to walk you through them steps, that's why you be irritated.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's, I done turned it off. I unplugged it. I gave it 30 seconds. I plugged it back up.
I think that's the bad thing about some unseasoned help desk workers. They can't tell if they're talking to a former help desk worker when they say, hey, I did all this, sir. I wouldn't have been calling you for that simple
exactly.
stuff.
We're needing to send someone out. Ugh.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have those problems anymore.
But let me see where we are at real quick. And closing out, I have not been keeping up with our show. Never Ever Mets. I only watched one episode.
I watched partial.
It's a show I just watched on Prime that's on Apple TV. Your Neighbors and something. There's some like Your Neighbor something. Pretty good so far, just from the first episode. A different type of show that's not on. Oh, did you see that they reported that allegedly this secret bunker was made for like these billionaires?
I did see that somewhere. And I just saw something on TikTok where people in Vegas are living right under the palace and all these areas. I just seen that this morning.
Really? I was like, yeah. They're trying to paradise or stealing or something.
But they're homeless people. But they said that the population was like 1,200 to 1,500 people.
You talking about them tunnels? Like,
yes.
That's so scary down there. It's like the underground. Like, it's nothing. It's just straight tunnels.
And I think it was supposed to be used for rain or something. Water.
Mm-hmm. But nah, that was interesting. But I definitely wouldn't want to be with... Like, Paradise showed you, you don't want to be with them fools.
Oh, I'm ready for second season.
Oh, I wonder if he's going to get to see his wife.
And did you watch... I felt like we talked about Reasonable Doubt. I'm ready for that, too.
Yeah. I like Reasonable Doubt, but I still feel like it's a low-budget version of Lincoln Lawyer.
It feels like being Mary Jane a little bit.
I was like, I just don't like... I think it's based off a true story. I don't know how true. I know some of the cases are true, but I was like, some of the stuff is just crazy because I'm like, why she got to be going through all that?
Yeah.
But to try to sue Lewis and her is crazy.
It's outrageous. It's outrageous. That's why I'm ready. That's exactly why I'm ready. Mm-hmm.
She going to lose that. I'm like, you must forget what lawyer you dealing with. I don't know. Everybody... I got a lot of stuff coming out. Well, I don't even know when this is dropping. Hopefully, I want it by the end of the week, but we shall see. But just keep your eyes peeled. I got a lot of content coming out. I've been shooting, getting back to kind of giving y'all the game, showing and telling y'all. So just make sure y'all tap in and y'all like it. And we got to make sure she posts her content because she probably just sitting on it. She's another Jasmine.
I am sitting on it.
Got to release it.
I know.
Ain't no good to us if we can't see it.
I know.
If we got to find you a little editor, $50 or something like that.
Yeah, because it's a lot.
Yeah, you probably got to find you a person and just have them do it and shoot and edit, and then that'll be it. But if you made it to the end, I'm trying to think what I was going to say. I used to always say, like, what's the last record of the rule book? I mean, what's the last page of the rule book say? But I'm trying to think of something that if they make it to the end, they can say something and they get a reward out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is coming to mind.
Me either.
That's crazy. As much TV as we watch.
It's not even that. I was just trying to think of, in general, what they would do.
DM you a word.
I know how I know if they made it to the end. If you made it to the end, comment your top 5 movies in the comments. It's going to be for 2 people. If you do this, I'll give you a free discovery call. So if you made it to the end, and not skip to the end, but if you made it to the end and do the 2 5s, I'll get you. Because what I'm going to do is If you comment something, I'm going to ask you something that happened at a part of the episode that's not timestamped to see if you was listening for real or you just skipped to the end. So that's all I got to say on that. Any words from you?
It's getting warm outside. Have fun. Take some time away. Step away and have fun. Unplug.
No, that's facts. Step away from the screen. Yeah. Go to sleep. Jump in the pool. Ooh, drink.
Can't wait to get in the pool.
All the above, really. But I appreciate y'all for tuning in with us. Until next time, let's stay textual and we out. Peace.